This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Thank you, friends. Thank you very much. Hey, Steve Fielder here once again. It's my privilege to be on stage here in the studio of the Gone to the Dogs podcast. Here on the west coast of Florida, right about 2 miles from the Gulf of America, coming at you alive, as the Statler brothers used to say. And man, I tell you what, I have had a battle with this darn voice. In fact, I don't know if I'm going to be able to carry this out or off today or not, but we'll just have to see what happens. But anyway, just a second, let me make a little bit of an adjustment here. Okay. All right, today I'm going to fly solo because I am struggling, and I didn't want to schedule someone and then have to cut their time. I've got a great interview coming up next week with a fellow from Indiana that has a lot of experience with tree dogs of several different kinds, and I'm really looking forward to having him on the podcast next week, and that's Darren Allgood. But today you're just going to get me, and I don't know if I'm all good or not, but what you get, see is what you get, for sure. As I'm recording this podcast, Plot Days is going on down in Tell City, Indiana, the Perry County Coon Hunters down there. And been to that area many, many times for Plot Days over the years, several trips with my dad. And I was just thinking about our sponsors, and I do want to thank Buddy Woodbury with W Hunting Supply. I want to thank the Alpha Dog Nutrition folks, and also Big Mark Zapp with Zapp Predator Calls for always, always being a strong supporter of this effort, and we thank him so much. I did want to mention that Mark has a great article this month in Full Crime Magazine as a tribute to his late father, who passed away at the age of 93. Mr. Zapp was not a houndsman. He was a doctor by profession, and they owned a beautiful family farm in Ohio, and that's where Mark was raised. And just a great tribute to his dad. And, you know, all of us who have been blessed with great fathers miss them very much. I know I certainly miss mine. And when I talk about Plot Days, I'm always thinking about my dad, because he and I attended that event so many times together over the years. But at any rate, all the Plot people are down on the river, down there in on the Ohio River in southern Indiana this weekend for their Plot Days. And, of course, by the time this airs on Monday, the Plot Days will have finished. And I can remember so many years driving that long drive back to West Virginia on Sunday, but having enjoyed immensely the opportunity to get together with my friends, some of them that I would not get to see but once a year. Unfortunately, in my case, and it's at every hand for me these days, as I reach forward to that 80-year mark in about a year and a half, that, you know, I'm losing a lot of friends. And as I think back on past Plot Days, I think of the many, many actual legends and heroes of the Plot breed that I knew over the years and look forward to seeing so much are not there anymore. So, any rate, if you are not a member of a breed association, you need to sign up, get a membership, go to Breed Days, and you will enjoy it immensely. Today, I'm going to try to get through this podcast with you. About 4 or 5 years ago, I wrote an article, and it was in American Cooner magazine, and it was largely dealing with, as I did write quite often, about the Walker Hound, because the Walker Hound has certainly been the leader in this competition game since in the late 50s when the game was established. You know, we know that Walker Hound, Houses Bawley won, you know, several. No, let's go back. That was not Houses Bawley. That was Merchants Bawley. Won 3 world championships in a period of 4 years. It was originally owned by James Merchant and later by Red Dolan in Nashville, Tennessee. But the Walker Hound has dominated the sport of competition hunting, and there's a reason why. I mean, they're great athletes. They've got a lot of desire. It's a speed contest. Who can tree the most coons in the shortest period of time? And Walker dogs just seem to excel. But a lot of breeds have done, if not equally as well, they've certainly done well. And it doesn't matter which breed that you choose to hunt in the hunts. If you've got a good one, you can do extremely well. I was just recently talking with Billy Bell, and we talked about Roger Schaible and his great red bone hunter's famous Amos. You know, there was a great dog. And then I recall the blue tick dog, Blue Run Gentleman with Tom Bradley in the Purina race several years ago, did extremely well. And I just heard of the passing of Big Country. What an impact as a blue tick he made on the sport of coon hunting. And our condolences go out to Ashley Oxendine and John Strickland and those fellows, Doug Galbraith, and those fellows that have lost a great, great hound there and in Big Country. But anyway, in this article about 5 years ago, I posed the question, what are the main qualities you look for in a competition hound? And I asked the folks to list them in the order of performance, you know, as a hunt, hustle, mouth, and so forth, and asked them to elaborate on what they thought it took to consistently get in the winning circle. You know, I got a lot of response to that. And I think in the article I posted like about 40 responses. And I'm going to kind of breeze through these a little bit and just kind of talk a little bit about them. And hopefully there'll be some information here that will resonate with you and will help you in your journey to have a good hound when the hunt comes around to your area, or maybe you want to travel to a breed days or to one of the amazing money hunts that are happening around the country these days. Well, some of the responses here's Heath Gilley of Georgia said, in my opinion, you have to have a dog that is accurate and one that'll actually hunt when you turn them loose instead of just blowing through the country. If you have a hound that'll do these two things, you'll win the majority of the time. Well, I think Heath's on to something there, of course. You know, you got to have a hound that'll go hunting. First of all, I mean, you're not going to do much if he just hangs around. In fact, there are rules that can actually scratch you or penalize you if your dog doesn't go hunting. So we want him to hunt for sure. And I'm really encouraged, shameless plug here, I've got a pup up in North Carolina out of our fever dog. I call him Ghost. And that's one thing he's showing my buddy Mark Miller is that he will go hunting. I'm watching him on the LTE Garmin tracker each night when they go out, and the pup's covering a lot of ground. He's not treeing a lot of game yet, but he sure is trying and working hard at it. So we like the dog that goes hunting. And Heath kind of, I think, puts an exclamation point on that or adds an addendum there that you want one that, you know, is actually hunting, not just blowing through the country. And, of course, I think you'll see in a lot of these responses that accuracy is very important. Jackson Marlowe of Alabama said accuracy. That's easy for me to say. Accuracy, drive, and independence for me. I want one that will try every way in the world to get away from everything else and get tree by itself. You bring up a good point there, Jackson. And today the hounds are independent. Man, are they ever. And, you know, we talk about, is this taught or is this bred into the dogs? I'm sure that some dogs are trained to be independent. They are, they get an adjustment if they cover other dogs and so forth. But by and large, the dogs that today are naturally independent. I got a long text from my buddy last night talking about having the dogs on the lead, heading back to the truck. The fever dog, he doesn't have to be led out of the woods. When the hunt's over, you just tell him, come on, he's there. He's going to be right there around you all the time going back. But apparently, going down the creek, he struck a track, and right away, fever found the tree and treed the coon. Well, the pup, Ghost, he had got so enthralled in working that track and finding that coon on the ground, he never did come into that tree with fever. He was continually working and working and working. Well, he's proven to be independent, and it's natural. Of course, that pup's never been scolded or toned or stimulated for covering another dog or whatever. He just it's just naturally that way. Brian Ruckman, there's a guy that has a world of experience in coon hunting. Owned the great Beaver Lake Magic dog up in Indiana, the one the UKC World Hunt in, I believe it was 1985. And Brian says this sums it up simply. The number one thing, trees, real, live, raccoons, and a lot of them. Who could disagree with that, right? And the number two thing is he stays hooked under any conditions, alone or in company. This is just to put it simply. If they do these things in what I call an efficient manner, they'll have the right tools. Brains, speed, nose, tracking ability, layup ability, etc., etc. Excellent points, Brian. And who could disagree with that? And you certainly have a record to support your ideas. Fred Ford of Oklahoma says it's heart, accuracy, and independence. The rest is tolerable, but I have to have those three to work with. Heart, you know, the desire. That down deep in the rib cage, within the rib cage, that drive, determination, call it whatever you want. Dog that stays out there, continually works. And that's what I'm loving about my pup that I have right now. He's not a quitter. He's going to work. He's going to be out there. He's going to be doing it. And he gets that from his daddy and his mommy, apparently. And so anyway, I like that too, Fred. Heart. And then, of course, accuracy and independence. Those things that, you know, if you don't have a coon in the tree, it's just a wasted effort. You know, circle points will get you, maybe get you a cast win on a bad night where you need a productive tree and coon just aren't moving. And that might work out for you occasionally, but most of the time, you know, two looking down is going to be the winning combination. Derek Goldman of Indiana, Derek's been around a while, says, like Fred, he says accuracy, independence, brains and drive. The rest can be taught. Well, that's interesting. Let's look at that, break that down a little bit. Accuracy comes from brains, okay? Knowing which tree that coon is up. Having the nose to tell the difference, I suppose, would be a good way to explain it. That independence again, and that's just in our hounds nowadays, folks. You know, the original dogs that we ran in these night hunts were pack animals. They came out of foxhound packs, many of them. And, you know, it was nothing for all four dogs to be treed together. And that's, we coined the term treeing contest because, and then handlers that were real sharp with a sharpie ear, and the ability to sort their dog out of the pack and get him on the scorecard with a first tree was very, very important in those days. Now that independence, you know, the dog getting out there on his own, getting away from the other dogs, finding a raccoon, and getting treed under it is the way the game is won today. Okay, Jamie Eastep, there's a guy. We just talked about plot days, and he's down there, of course, helping, as he always is. He's just the Energizer Bunny when it comes to these coon hunts. You see him on the coverage of the Tournament of Champions. He's a field rep for UKC. He's a state president for the West Virginia Coon Hunters Association. He's a pastor. He's an administrator for a school. So, you know, he wears a lot of hats. But anyway, Jamie says, first of all, accuracy. Having a coon a high percentage of the time. Amen, Jamie. Two, brains to listen. He says in West Virginia, just to listen on a timeout, many hunts have been lost on a dog not listening. In other words, he's talking about a dog that will handle, a dog that will listen to you, a dog will come to you. Again, you know, it's just a shameless plug for my pup. I asked Mark, how's he doing? How's he handling? He says, oh, when I need him, I can get him in. I just need to tone him. And call him, and here he comes. So that's something that we have to, at some points along the way, we have to be able to handle our dog. And so listening or obeying, being obedient is important. Jamie lists as his third point, consistency. Knowing what you have in any terrain you're hunting in. Well, that's certainly true. And I've always said that the mark of a real hound, a real coon dog, is wherever you unsnap him, he's got one thing on his mind, and that's to tree a raccoon. Single-mindedness. You know, not paying attention to the other dogs, not being concerned about livestock anything that would distract him or break his train of thought about finding that raccoon and then letting that desire kick in. And, you know, he said also to be physically in shape. He says, especially in PKC or larger events that have a late round, hunting in a late round can be different. Well, that's true, and a lot of dogs just simply run out of gas. You know, they're all fired up. They go out there and they have to hunt a hard first round, maybe cover a lot of distance, make several trees, whatever. And do they have that same fire and desire for a late round? Well, that's a lot to do with conditioning. It's a lot to do with how much they've been hunted, what kind of shape they're in, and, you know, but they've got to be good to go on that late round, just like in the early round, if they're going to be successful, especially in these bigger hunts in formats like the World Championship. And then Jamie says the fifth element he thinks is the handler, that the handler has to be prepared and in tune with the dog. There's no substitute, folks, for being out there hunting your dog through the week. A lot of guys just take their dog to a hunt on the weekend and expect, you know, to do well. But if the guys that really know the dog that they're handling have all the advantages. Okay, Ryan Hollis of Alabama. I don't know Ryan, but he says, I like independence with track power and a tree dog. He says, the hounds I'm hunting are quiet. They bump here and there on track. I like that, for it makes it harder for a backpacking dog to keep up with them as far as location. I hate backpacking dogs. Well, I think we all agree with that, Ryan. Hate is a strong word, but also the dog must have the motor to go as far as it takes to get treed. Now, obviously, Ryan's a young man, because if he was 78 years old, he would not probably like that so much. But he says, he qualifies it by saying, I'm not talking about blowing through and passing up coons, but getting to where the coon is no matter the distance. And that, there's a lot of truth in that, Ryan. You know, get in there, get in where they are, and usually where there's one, there's going to be more. And he says, I understand looks don't exactly play any part in the hunt, but for it to be on my lead, it must meet the breed standards as well. I'm with you, Ryan. I don't want to have to back up to a dog with the feed pan. You know, I like to just sit and look at my dogs. My dogs are probably a little closer to me than some. I tend to raise them here very close to me, spend a lot of time with them. And another point on that, I'll just get up on my stump a little bit. This puppy that's up in North Carolina, he's 10 months old. He's raised in the house here. He got a lot of attention. I'm not a guy that just sits around and pets him all day. But he had a lot of interaction with my wife and me. Then I send him up to North Carolina, and he's just tearing the back out of the dark up there. So it really doesn't affect them. Okay. Anyway, he says also that when I say independence, I mean natural and not made by man or man-made. And he wishes me good luck in getting my article done. And boy, could I ever use that on a regular basis. Joe Zinn of Maryland, he's just kind of put to the point kind of guy. He says, the want to, the brains, mouth, accuracy, and nose. Those are his points. Want to. The dog has to have desire, brains. He has to be able to accept the training that you're giving him, accept the lessons that Mother Nature's teaching him out there as he's working those tracks. A good mouth. Man, I love a good mouth on a hound. And I think most hunters do. Now, I see videos of people posting their dogs. And they're really good tree dogs. I mean, hard tree dogs, but they kind of sound like you're, you know, squeezing a squeaky toy. Now, you can hear that kind of dog a long ways. And that may just suit that owner to a T, and God bless him if it does. But I like a mouth with some substance, you know, with some volume to it and some depth to it. And there again is that accuracy and nose. You know, we could do a whole podcast on nose, and is it important, or how important is it? That dog has got to have a good nose. And not only to trail a track, that may be, you know, quite some length of time since it traveled. But also to have, you know, the ability to use that nose to know where that coon climbed, which tree did he climb. If he climbed two or three in that area, which one did he climb last? Did he climb up this vine here? Did he climb up the main stalk of the tree? Or if it split at the bottom, did he climb up that tree on the far side? I mean, you know, there's a lot of things where accuracy and nose come into play. And I've often said, you know, that the real coonhound is an artist. He's a technician. He's technical. We talk about fly fishing, and certain streams are more technical than others. Well, how does a river be technical? Well, the fish in it have, you know, they've been fooled before. They've been fished a lot, and, you know, they get smart. And you've got to, you know, try to outsmart that fish if you're going to catch him with your fly. The same thing applies to these coonhounds. You know, they've got to be able to work that track out and to nail that coon down, no matter whether he's crossed over a log across that creek or he's gone up a vine and walked that vine out a couple of trees and come down one over there, two or three trees over. Just a lot of things like that that a hound's nose is going to enable him to do, with the end result to you know, have a coon over his head when you get in there to score him. Okay, here's Nathan Border of Texas. He said apparently. He addresses the subject of indifference. He wants a dog that will catch coons and leave the rest alone. In other words, he wants a straight cooner. He wants a dog that's only interested in coons. And I'm with you, Nathan. You know, I like a dog. I like to program these pups on the game I want them to hunt, or imprint them, so to speak, so that that's all they're looking for. You know, you can run trash, you can run junk, and the argument can be made that that improves a dog's trackability, and it probably does to some degree. But I like the idea that a dog gets single-minded, you know, and as Nathan says here, he gets coons and leaves the rest alone. He says just because a dog comes back with a big score doesn't make him a coon dog or a competition dog. He said he scored 750 with a dog that he didn't consider a competition dog, but is every bit a coon dog. That dog consistently gets first strike in tree and consistently is right, meaning he has the coon, and consistently leaves off game alone. And he believes that that is the dog that will win. And he also puts a little caveat on that, that the handler plays a very important part in all that, that he's cost himself a cast win a time or two. But he says, a big score to me never carries the weight of consistency or consistently beating the dogs you draw. That's why when I was at the AKC, we started this idea of a cast win and accumulating so many cast wins to be a night champion. I always felt that the only thing that you have control of in a night hunt is to beat. I mean, you know, your challenge is to beat the four or the three dogs you draw, and that's all. You have absolutely no control over what happens in another cast. If that cast gets in a honey hole with a coon up every bush and they score 1,000 points, and you get one old residenter that likes to take the hounds through a clear cut and around the barn before he'll get treed, and you get him treed, and your score's better than the other hounds, that's all you can do in that at that point. You know, if you hunted that whole county out where you're hunting, you might not find a nest of coons like that other cast did. But, and he goes on to say, a big score to me never carries the weight of consistently beating the dogs you draw. A friend of his has hunted a young dog in 4 hunts, 1 is cast in each. No crazy scores, but he's an all-competition dog. And then he goes on to say, mouth is a limiting factor as well as heart. I hunt plots, so I rarely see any lack of heart, but I will see lack of mouth. But having a quieter mouth is a blessing and a curse. Nobody wants to be able to hear your dog. However, at times you can slip off alone without the Me Too aspect of the game. Well, he touched on something there that I've noticed in the plot breed. When I was a kid growing up with plot dogs, the mouths were strong, heavy, you know, hound mouths. Many times they had good ball mouths on them and all. And I've noticed over the years that a lot of plot dogs have that choked down voice, kind of like mine is today, you know, and I'm not sure exactly where that comes from, but that's one thing I'd like to breed for is dogs with strong mouths, dogs that I can hear, and if you can't hear them, you can't get them on the paper, that's for sure. How many times have you watched the competition videos? Do you hear this common term that you get? You got me, judge. You got me, judge. In other words, you got to make that judge hear your dog. And in order for that to happen, he can't be, you know, bringing the bark down out of his toenails. He needs to have a good, strong voice and let it ring on that tree. At least that's my preference. Jordan Wright of North Carolina says he definitely wants one with brains, accuracy, and independent. They need to have drive, and they need to be loud. Well, there you go, Jordan. We just talked about that. Everybody likes a loud mouth when it comes to coon dogs. I don't know why anyone would want anything less. Wayne Armstrong is in Alabama. Wayne says he wants one that can run the hare off of a hot track, but can also run a cold track. And he wants one that will stay under pressure, one that has the meat and not too quick at the tree, and one that will tree a layup coon when nothing is moving. Well, that's a strong combination, Wayne. And the way the dogs hunt independently nowadays, you really don't need one that's super quick on a tree. You know, the dogs are not going to be covering your dog anyway. So take your time and let the dog settle in. And knowing the difference in a dog that's still checking and all comes from that Monday through Thursday, hunting that dog and learning everything about him. Can't overemphasize that. Skeeter Connor of Virginia. Now, that's a good name for a coon hunter. He says, I personally look for brains, desire, heart, demeanor. There's a new word. Demeanor, you know, confirmation, and it's breeding. He's like me. He's a pedigree guy. He likes to go back and look and see what's behind the dog. And if he's a student like I am of these pedigrees, you kind of know, you know, we're going to be a lot like our parents. But this thing of demeanor, what does that mean? Well, you know, his temperament, his the way he carries himself, you know, when you take him out of the box, does he fuzz up and get stiff-legged and walk around bumping the other hounds. Or, you know, is he just glad to be there, give him a sniff, and let's go, you know? And the way they conduct themselves around the house, these dogs that I've got right now are barkers. They like to bark. But they're usually, there's a reason why they're barking. But sometimes that barking can get a little too much, and that's why these bark collars or training collars, e-collars come in handy for that sort of thing. And if they've got any of that brains that we're talking about, they pick that up real quick. It's fine to bark when you're out there off the lead. But around the kennel, not so much. Skeeter says he's looking for heart in a hound. To him, that's the hound that won't quit, won't give up, has plenty of drive and grit. Yeah, we all like that in a hound, I would think. Man, who wants a mamby-pamby dog that's out there in and out, hot and cold, inconsistent? Get one with, you know, that's focused, desire. And, you know, here's another shameless plug. In the plot breed, I like this idea that this line of dogs that I have, and I'll congratulate Bill Scheniger for breeding the dog that he has, the Lazarus dog. They have a lot of that desire and grit, no quit. No give up. So that, I think we all like that stuff, Skeeter. He says to explain demeanor, it's the way the hound reacts to him and the other hounds and his personality. He says he used to train show horses, and the quality he looked for in horses are the same qualities he looks for in hounds. My friend Jerry Price over in North Carolina is a horseman too, and I guess I'm sure Jerry would agree with you, Skeeter. Dean Jamerson of Virginia, he says he's read a lot of articles and interviews with some of the best handlers and houndsmen in the country, but when they were talking about that dog that consistently won cast after cast after cast, and the one common theme that he picked up was heart. They almost always mention heart. I think it's a given one has to go hunting and have coons. The style he uses to get there is a matter of personal preference, in his opinion. But what makes a dog a one percenter, it has to be heart or have heart, willing to perform when the chips are down. I think if you follow other types of working dogs, he says, it holds true there as well. Heart, desire, determination, consistency. That's all the ways that I interpret what Dean's saying there. I agree with you, Dean. Colin McCoy lives in North Carolina. He says, I agree with the brains aspect. I want him to go hunting and have a loud mouth, but also have good manners around the tree, no illness or aggression. I hate ill dogs, he says. I want him to hold his tree but not start trouble. And he also needs to have layup abilities and a good nose with the ability to use it. Well, this point about layups Colin brings to the table. And, you know, this can be argued that a lot of the dogs we see now are not such good layup dogs, meaning that they just all of a sudden are deep in the country and they come treed and they've treed a layup, which we mean as a coon that's been up in the tree a long time, either sleeping, resting, feeding, whatever. But they may be just treeing what they can smell. And that may be a coon that just ran up a tree when the dog came into the area. And the dog nailed that hot scent. And that's a good combination for competition hunting, because you want to be able to see that coon. And that's the way a lot of the dogs today win. A true layup dog, though, is a dog that has a good nose and knows how to use that nose in various ways. It may be trailing a coon to a tree and knowing the scents there on the bark. Many times it's a dog that works the air currents above his head and knows that there's coon scent up there, and has the ability to zero in on that scent and nail that coon, whether he's been on the ground or not. To me, that's a true layup dog. Even though that coon may have been laying up there for hours. And you hear a lot of guys say, you know, a dog treed one that was sleeping. Well, if he's any kind of a tree dog, if your dog's any kind of tree dog, that coon's probably not sleeping when you walk up there. He's hearing that dog on the ground barking, rattling the acorns off the tree. But he was up there sleeping when that dog located him, and or may have been sleeping. So anyway, that's a term cooners use, and it's not wrong, but it's not 100% accurate either. But anyway, that's a layup dog to me. Tell a little story. A couple guys came over from across the eastern part of the state when I had a dog named Bronco. Bronco was about 6 years old when I went to UKC to work, and was absolutely 100% coon and bear dog at that time. And these guys came over with the interest in breeding to Bronco. They had a pop female. Turned Bronco around a cornfield. It was wild cherry time in late August, maybe early September. Bronco made three trees around that cornfield, and each tree had two coons in it. And he nailed those coons. We looked at them, but he made not a single bark on the ground. He simply worked that cornfield, knew there was a coon up there over his head, and nailed it, cur dog style. So when I asked the guys what they thought about my dog when we put him in the box, they said, well, he's definitely a coon dog, but we like an open trailing dog, and I don't think he's going to work out for us. Well, you know, you can tell people all you want to tell them, but showing them is always better. So I invited them to come back in the wintertime when the corn has all been picked and the tracks are cold and the moon is out and the frost is on the ground, and see what kind of a trailing dog he was. And he definitely was. And he would open, you know, with a pretty ball mouth on a cold, bad track and work it up and tree it and have his coon. And I showed that to several people. But on that given night, he was simply treeing those hot coon up over his head. So anyway, you know, it's a matter of preference, the type of dog that you like. But to me, I like the all-purpose dog, the one that can, as this guy says, willing to perform, or Dean, I'm sorry. I stepped back one too many. Colin McCoy, it was, said he wanted one with a good nose and the ability to use it. And, of course, the Bronco dog definitely had those capabilities. It's one, I guess, was my all-time favorite hound. Larry Weaver of Ohio. Now, Larry's had some good ones. He owned Mill Creek Molly. In her latter years, he owned Buck Creek Mr. Smith. that won the AKC World Championship twice. He knows a coon dog for sure. He says he likes a track driving accurate tree dog, and he says that's what will go a long way in these hunts. And he had that type in the dogs that I mentioned to you before, for sure. Larry's a real class guy that I enjoy knowing and being his friend, for sure. Well, Eddie Williams of Missouri says, I look for speed and an honest strike dog that you can tree on their locate in deep. Now, Eddie is a black and tan man, if I haven't misidentified him. So he likes the speed, and I do too. You know, I don't think there's anything interesting about going to a contest, a race, a horse race, a car race, a football game, a basketball game, or anything. If your team is in last place and always behind the others, we want to be up front, don't we? For sure. Jack Funderburk of South Carolina likes a dog that's a good track dog and also that goes hunting. He doesn't cover and he doesn't blow out. And then he tacks on the fact that he wants one with a handle. Boy, that sounds like a nice dog that I'd enjoy hunting, Jack. Bruce Jansen is one of the best dog men in this game. I've heard it from many, many good dog people themselves. And I know Bruce has a friend who have had many conversations with him. And he knows his stuff for sure. Bruce says, I don't believe you can limit it to one thing. Every dog needs a certain amount of training. So obviously they need some brains, at least enough to absorb what you're trying to teach them. Say it again for those in the back, Bruce. At least enough to absorb what you're trying to teach them. Probably natural independence would be right there. By that I mean coon hunting as soon as they're loose. Whether dogs are with them or not, they do what it takes to tree the first coon they come to. And then he cites Brian Ruckman that said they have to have they have to stay treed no matter what. And, of course, they must have coons. There you've heard it from the master. You know, when you turn them loose, they have to go looking for a coon. They need to be independent naturally. And then they, you know, tree the first coon they come to, get on the card early. And then stay treed. If you don't have a tree dog, folks, you're going to a gunfight with a pocket knife. You just can't win this game unless you have a dog that will stay treed. When you put him on the paper, you cannot worry about, is that dog going to stay there? And if you watch the videos and watch some of these pro sport hunts and enjoy hunts and so forth, you're going to see that those handlers are not hesitant at all about treeing that dog. The challenge for them is to get into position so the judge can hear the dog and put him on the paper. So, at any rate, we'll move on here. I want to move down to Wade Morton. He's a good guy. I met Wade out in White River in Arkansas. Had gotten his side-by-side stuck, and his wife was hunting with him. And our group were out there hunting. And we had the opportunity to help Wade get his side-by-side out of that deep mud hole as you go around Kansas Lake there right at the beginning. And I've really enjoyed his friendship. Now, he alternates between Michigan and Florida and what we call a snowbird, But anyway, he says, number one, have the coon. Number two, go hunting. Number three, get treed. The big thing today is, here's this word again, consistency. I'm tired of dogs looking like $1 million one night, and the next night you wouldn't give 50 cents for it. We've all been there, Wade. We have all been there, and that is so true. If you can get one that's consistent, that you know that you know that you know what he's going to do, man, you're way ahead of this game. Bruce Conkey, my dog supply guru from up in the northeastern part of Florida, what a giant in our sport he is, not only from the standpoint of producing great customer service and supplies for just about anything we could need. He's assembled quite a great crew with Zach and Corey and his staff there that are great on customer service. Just good guys, man. But that's Conkey's Outdoors. But Bruce says mouth is very important. A good hunter and have a coon. My number one is don't be rough, but don't be pushed around. I think that is the most interesting one, and a book could be written on that subject alone. Okay, ill dogs. Now, this topic comes up from time to time, and it is thought by some, and maybe with a degree of accuracy, that these dogs that are so independent today is because they can't get along with anything, and it's a good thing they are, because they don't like the other dogs, and that's why they're independent. Now, I don't know to what degree that holds water, but certainly, you know, the worst thing that you can have, in my view, in a coon hunt, if you're a guy that enjoys the fellowship aspect of coon hunting, the camaraderie of coon hunting, just not only at the hunts, but, you know, on Wednesday night after prayer meeting, you can't be hunting a dog that's mean. If your dog thinks his mission in life is to eat the other dogs on the cast, you're going to have a rough time. Number one, your hunt's going to be spoiled right up from the start. Or it could be like on one that I was in an RQE up in Georgia. We had one dog that was never working with any of the other dogs and never on any of the trees, which is good if he's getting something done. But right at the end of the cast, he comes in to a tree and decides to whip everything there. So, you know, you got to have a dog that gets along with the others, and I don't see any advantage whatsoever of hunting a rough dog. Now, my good friend Riley LaFoon, who owned the Sting dog and, you know, had made a real impact on the black and tan breed, and, you know, was a field rep for UKC and a great man, a Christian man. I respected Riley. He liked them to be a little gritty, a little salty, as we say. He said, if they don't have that in them, Steve, they won't stay, and they got to stay. Well, you can argue that point both ways. You know, you certainly don't want your dog to be intimidated by other dogs. If he's done all the work and somebody comes in there and wants to put him off, but if you get in a dog fight, a full-blown dog fight, you can be scratched for that. And that opens up a whole can of worms about light breaking the dog. In other words, getting after him so much that, you know, he's a devil out there in the dark, but he's an angel when he sees the light coming. And there's certainly some like that out there. Well, the old voice is just about gone, but I'm going to wrap this up with the last one from Chris Rochester of South Carolina. Chris is my hero, man. He's the first and only guy as far as I'm concerned, and I think I know this to be true, that took a plot hound all the way to Hall of Fame as far as Grand Knight champion. That means you've got to make Grand Knight champion five times. And his dog Maximus achieved that. Maximus has since passed on across that rainbow bridge, as we say. But here's what Chris had to say in closing. The first thing I look for in puppies or even a starting dog is brains. If a dog has brains, then you have something to work with. Next, I would look at hunt drive. When you take them to the woods, if a dog has no desire to hunt, then you're wasting your time trying to make them hunt. Next, I would look at how accurate they are. To repeat, Chris says the next thing he would look for is hunt drive. When you take them to the woods, if a dog has no desire to hunt, then you're wasting your time to try to make them hunt. I agree, Chris. You know, you just can't really put the hunt in a dog. Next, he says, I would look at how accurate they are. If a dog is accurate, then that's an indication that they have a good nose. Finally, I look at how consistent they are. There's that word again. If a dog can consistently show you coons and have all the previously listed traits, then you're more than likely going to have something that you'll enjoy hunting. Tree power and being able to move a trap fast are nice, but if a dog isn't accurate or consistent, then I would say you aren't working with much. And that's his opinion. Well, Chris, point very, very well taken. You know, there's several more of these responses that I'll share with you as time goes by. We've virtually used up our hour here with this podcast, and it's been kind of interesting to go back and see what other people think, you know, things from their perspective, and I'm sure you have your own. I hope you'll listen to this, and maybe go back and listen to it again, because there's some excellent points here, and if you're going down that road to having a competition dog of your own, something that you can take to town and win with, it would do you good to heed some of this advice. And that's going to be it for the old coon hunter Steve Fielder for this episode of Gone to the Dogs. I've really enjoyed being with you, and I appreciate your tolerance of my voice. Hopefully this thing is going to straighten out for me soon. The summertime is upon us, and it won't be long till we'll be seeing each other at Autumn Oaks, something I look forward to all the time. At any rate, this is the old coon hunter Steve Fielder saying, if you're looking for me, wondering where I went, what I'm doing, it's pretty safe to bet that I've gone to the dogs.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kid will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.